It's late in the evening, and I can see that radio light. And everybody gathers, and everybody'd rather be together on a Saturday night. Coffee on the stove, a sweet potato pie. You probably couldn't stand it. We're smiling like a bandit together on a Saturday night. Well, you're listening to Shaun of the South, and I'm your host tonight, Shaun Dietrich, coming to you live via the podcast airwaves and radio waves all over this fine nation. Special guest tonight, Hot Club of Cowtown, and Michael Grauer, the curator of the National Western Heritage and Cowboy Museum in Oklahoma City. This episode brought to you by Case Knives, a tradition in my family dating back to my granddaddy. Also by my buddy Ron Taylor, who helps scour the nation looking for the best music. Look him up at WNC Original Music. You won't regret it. Listening to Shaun of the South, a show that is kind of funny. I believe we're about 4 years old now. We have modeled this show when we first started. We modeled it after an old-time radio show, which a lot of people said was stupid. And I'm pleased to say that after these years, those people were right. Because we are not like other, you know, outfits. We try to maintain that old feel, because it is our personal opinion that shows like Jack Benny and, you know, Amos and Andy, shows like Abbott and Costello were underappreciated in our own childhood, and now they're certainly more than underappreciated. They're just not known. I used to have a cassette tape that I carried with me, if that shows you how what generation I'm from. In a little portable tape player that was about the size of a cinder block that you'd wear on your belt, and you'd have to have three belts to hold it up to keep it from falling down. And it was Abbott and Costello radio shows, and I loved it. I loved their old ads. They used to have an ad for Winston cigarettes, or maybe no, it was Camel cigarettes, and it would be soothing on the T-zone. The man said, in a very official physician's voice, the T-zone was the throat area, soothing on the throat. Winston cigarettes, they would say, the most number one recommended cigarette of doctors. Wow, times have changed. Although we still have some old-time sponsors, such as this cup of coffee I'm drinking right now is brought to you by Midnight Shift Coffee, the official coffee of the Pensacola Police Department. A buck from each bag goes to benefit children with childhood cancer to the Riley Foundation. Visit MidnightShiftCoffee.com and get your bag today. It's good, it's bright, and it will light you up with caffeine that you need. Also by Folklore Brewing and Meadery, quite literally the best brew in Alabama, and that's no joke. Visit Folklore Brewing and Meadery. .com. The reason I tell you about old radio is because old radio had a long-standing tradition of publishing shows that were about cowboys. Cowboys. Cowboys were everything to the American kid, dating back as far back as cowboys. And so this week we bring you, via the theater of the mind, to Cowboy Country, which exists, I don't know if you know this, all over the United States, not just in the American West, the Midwest, the Northwest. Cowboys exist even in the South. The old Florida cracker cowboys herded their herds into the longleaf pines and were very, very brave men. Every cowboy we found through doing extensive research for this show had its own identity, all the way up in Montana, all the way down to Texas, to the panhandle of Florida, to the heartland of Kansas. So, coming up on our first half, we're going to bring you and introduce you to Michael Grauer, the curator for the National Cowboy and Western Heritage Museum in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. It's a museum with over 28,000 Western and American Indian artifacts and artworks. You got to hear about it. You're not going to want to miss it. But first, speaking of cowboys, this music you're about to hear from this cowboy group, it's hard to imagine that it's just coming from three people, but they are a trio. So everybody here in the studio, why don't you give it up for the Hot Club of Cowtown? We might be small, but we sure are ugly and loud.
Don't you send me flowers and say your love is true. Making like you love me and saying what you do. Don't you say you've missed me, I'm always on your mind. Don't whisper those sweet nothings I can't ever find. So I've gone to the mountains, picking bluebells and mountain columbine. Oh, I've gone to the mountains for violets and birds of paradise. But forget me not, I'm skipping high, I'm leaving them behind. Don't you send me presents, don't call me on the phone. Don't leave me waiting all night alone. Don't say you'd regret it if I become his bride. Cause darling, if you loved me, you'd be here by my side. So I've gone to the mountains, picking bluebells and mountain columbine. Oh, violets and birds of paradise. But forget me not, I'm skipping on, I'm leaving them behind.
Of our show is brought to you by Visit North Alabama, or hashtag Visit North AL. Visit the 16 North Alabama counties that make the state above my state, the Florida Panhandle, only 40 miles away from this studio. It makes the state what it is. You can see all the things that you ever wanted to see, like an old cabin that really is a church and it's still in operation these hundreds and hundreds of years later. Or you can take the roads, the back roads, and find all the barbecue you want. Whatever you want to do, you can find it, and you can do it better in North Alabama. So visit northalabama.org or hashtag visit North AL. Going to read you a little bit of our mail. A little bit of our mail sent in to us from listeners all over this fine nation. I had nothing better to do than to put pen to paper or thumb to phone screen and tell us a little about themselves, a little bit about their life. Our first message comes from Hannah in West Lafayette, Indiana. Dear Sean, I just finished listening to your show from the cow pasture, and as usual, you made me laugh, made me cry, and everything in between. I just want you to know what an absolute joy and blessing your show is to me. I was especially excited to see the second South Carolina string band featured. They have been a favorite of mine for quite some time. I look forward to the upcoming episode you mentioned about Hannibal. Well, Hannah, so do I. Thank you for the letter. R. Jackson from Bangor, Maine. Dear Sean, originally from Andalusia, Alabama, but I miss being home. I do appreciate a little bit of the Southeast each week or wherever you want to take us. Thank you for taking us somewhere. This has been a hard year. Maybe one day you'll get up to Maine. I hope so. If you do, I'll buy you a beer. Well, dear Mr. Jackson, you got it. Although I don't foresee myself going up to Maine anytime soon, I won't rule it out, though. Jessica in Sorrento, Florida. Hey, Sean, I hope this finds you well. And I just filled to the brim with good things that make you want to take a deep breath. I was thinking about you and your writing recently, especially with all the talk of good Southern food that you do. I usually read your latest story late at night before I go to sleep, and I have to resist the temptation to trip over our three-legged dog, Lieutenant Dan, to make way to the kitchen for a snack from the refrigerator. I recently rediscovered a cookbook that was put together and published by the sweet ladies and some gentlemen from, get this, Hanging Dog Baptist Church from Murphy, North Carolina. Sean, this was given to me by my second cousin on my dad's side, and my great aunt and my great grandma are contributors. Oh, looking through it has been a gold mine. There are recipes, all sorts of recipes, for something called pig licking cake, for sweet potato dumplings, for company coleslaw, pickled corn, Cherokee Indian fry bread, and four, count them, four different kinds of pound cakes. Sean, I reckon the women were fighting over which recipe would make the cut and decided, well, all of them made the cut. Lord, I can't wait to start on the delicious and often simple recipes. Just glancing through it, you can throw a lot of things into a casserole dish with cream of chicken soup and serve it to company. How can you go wrong when you listen to three or dozen or so older women from a place called Hanging Dog Baptist Church? All my best, Jessica. Dear Jessica, please send leftovers. Philip in Louisville, Kentucky. Dear Sean, so glad to have your podcast back. Keep it up. Keep it up. Thank you, Philip. We are glad to be back. Sacramento, California. Sacramento, California. Doesn't have a name, just the town. Dear Sean, my dad is in a nursing home, and he has one of those devices where you talk to Alexa and ask her to do stuff. But he hadn't figured her out yet. I guess she's like any female and hard to figure out. But we have got him listening to a bunch of podcasts now. And we've taught him how to call them all up. And so, needless to say, now he's a listener of your podcast. But actually, he listens to your podcast, whereas other podcasts he will shut off after 5 minutes through. Yours, he only shuts off about 10 minutes through. That's a good sign, I think. Thanks for the show. Paul in Wyoming. Did Sean come to Wyoming? There's nothing here, and that's what makes it so great. Because since there's nothing here, it's unspoiled and perfect. You will see things you never thought existed in Wyoming. I promise it will make you consider living here. If you come, look me up. We'll hang out. Dear Paul, you got it. I've always wanted to go see Wyoming. Actually, it's right up there on the very, very top of my list, right underneath Dollywood. Ellen, Huntsville, Alabama. Sean, I have a friend who introduced me to your show, and I must say, I'm starting to get it. At first, I was just enjoying the stories, but now I'm going a step further, and I realize you're doing a lot more than just storytelling. You are, and this is not a joke, putting me to sleep. Ha ha, ha ha. Just kidding. I know you've heard that joke because I've heard it on your show. I hope this isn't a tender subject. Your voice really does help put me to sleep. Dear Ellen, thank you for the reminder. It's no wonder my wife and I have a hard time communicating because she's always snoring when I'm trying to talk to her. Thomas Cato, South Georgia. Sean, your podcasts are terrific. Also, cornflakes and potatoes are just spectacular. I heard you mention them once. I know that little Formica kitchen table you talked about so well. I sat at it. I grew up at it. I ate breakfast with my father every morning when I was a kid many, many years ago. I'm 77 now. I also watched my mother teach my kids how to make biscuits on that little table. My wife tried to copy her recipe, but never could capture that magic. Rather, she would just eat her biscuits. Your stories touch me deeply. I grew up in a small town in tiny South Georgia with a population of about 200 to 300. Thanks for painting the word pictures I see in my mind's eye. Really good memories. Keep up the good work. Thank you, Thomas. Thank you for reminding me of why I am so hungry right now. Reginald Taylor, Portland, Oregon. I found your podcast on my fancy computerized car radio, and I just wanted to reach out and see if you would read my message over the air. I've listened to half of your shows. I grew up working on a cattle ranch, so your podcast about the cow pasture really hit home. You learn to love cows when you handle them. They are gentle creatures, although I have seen them break bones with men who aren't careful. Thanks a lot, your friend, Reginald. Madison, in Telluride, Colorado. Dear Sean, my mother passed away last month, and the world has been hopeless without her. Now, I have been trying to remain positive, I promise, but it's just not been easy. There are a few things that cheer me up. Ice cream is one of those things. But old-time music is another one of those things. So thank you for the music on your show. I really do appreciate small things a lot more than I ever did before. Your friend, Madison. Well, Madison, thank you for the letter, and that's letters from our listeners. Thank you to everybody who took the time to send us a message. And if you'd like to send us anything, please feel free to do so. You can send it to us at seanofthesouthshow@gmail.com, or you can go to our website, seanofthesouthshow.com, where you can find archived episodes dating back to the first episode all the way to this episode, which you're hearing live in your ear right now. You can find a contact form on that page, and you can send us a message. Tell us about your birthday announcements, wedding invitations, a potluck, social, and I'll do my best to read them over the air for my friends, because I love to do that sort of stuff for my friends. And speaking of old-time music brought to my attention by Madison in Telluride, Colorado, here's a song for you, Madison, from the Hot Club of Cowtown.
and bliss. I can't believe I ever felt a gentle summer rain or heard the rain fall when it didn't call your name. Never tasted anything quite as sweet as your lips kissing mine.
Club of Cowtown. Man, these guys are good. It's hard to believe just a trio. But they're the real deal as far as cowboy bands go. They've shared the stage with the likes of Willie Nelson and Bob Dylan. With me tonight is Michael Grauer from the National Cowboy and Western Heritage Museum. On this sleepy Saturday night, we are talking about cowboys. The National Cowboy and Western Heritage Museum owns the world's most extensive collection of American rodeo photographs, barbed wire, saddlery, early artifacts, and early rodeo trophies. They have exhibits dedicated to every facet of cowboyhood. It ought to be on the list of every child and every man and every woman who ever dared to call himself an American. That's at least how I feel about it. What I want to know is, Michael, how did you get into cowboys?
Well, you know, I've been studying cowboys ever since I could read. And what I've come to know in my research and publications and public speaking and doing a living history cowboy program, et cetera, is that there's no greater recognizable symbol worldwide than the American cowboy. And I'm a great believer in supporting that history and the promotion of that history, because we all need symbols. There's no greater symbol than of America than the American cowboy. It's something that the world embraces, and we need not forget who built America. And I say this all the time. You know, it was hired men on horseback who helped build America with beef, because America wasn't built on broccoli; it was built on beef. So
that's a shame. My mother's going to take umbrage with that. She might believe otherwise. All right, what I want to know is, and for our listeners out there, what is it like to come to work, to walk through the front door, and walk through the National Cowboy and Western Heritage Museum? Give us a mental picture of that.
It's interesting, because the whole idea of what was then called the National Cowboy Hall of Fame was the idea of a man who was the chairman of the board of the Lee Jeans Company in Kansas City. And he had cowboyed a little bit and homesteaded, cowboyed in Kansas and homesteaded in Colorado a little bit. And by the time he became a CEO of Lee Jeans in the early 50s, he felt like after visiting the Will Rogers Memorial in Claremore, Oklahoma, that there ought to be a memorial to the builders of the West, as he called them. And he pegged the cowboy as the primary symbol of that effort. And he actually, his name was Chester Reynolds, and Mr. Reynolds made an announcement at the Cheyenne Frontier Rodeo in 1953 that he was going to seek the help of all the governors in the Western states and prominent people to help create this thing called the National Cowboy Hall of Fame. And by 1955, they'd put together a board of directors, and there was a national competition. Went from 45 cities across the West to 10, down to three. The three finalists were Dodge City, Kansas, Colorado Springs, Colorado, and Oklahoma City. And Oklahoma City made the best bid, plus its location today on Interstate 44 and very close to Interstate 35. Interstate 40 is not far from here. So the National Cowboy Museum sits on what's called Persimmon Hill, just north of Oklahoma City downtown. And you can see it from miles away. So when it finally opened to the public in 1965, our emphasis was on the working cowboy, rodeo cowboys, and then the stories that evolved from there in different directions. So when you enter the building, which was changed dramatically in the early 90s from its original configuration, there's a row of galleries that talk about the American West, but the heart and soul, of course, is the American Cowboy Gallery. And so when you enter the American Cowboy Gallery, the first thing that you see are tools of the trade, let's call them. Saddle, boots, hat, kind of in a little diorama, but right behind it is a chuck wagon diorama. And the chuck wagon itself comes from the famous Matador Ranch, which was in West Texas. One of the first artifacts the museum acquired in the mid-60s was the Matador chuck wagon. So that's set up as a diorama, with a cowboy on horseback, a cook, and then a horse wrangler rolling up bedrolls behind it. And that's right there. That's what you're confronted with. You turn left to the industry section, and you're led through in a series of exhibit cases and dioramas from the origins of cowboydom, let's call it, from its origins in North and West Africa to Mexico, through the Spanish colonial period, Mexican period. And then really when the trail drives start coming out of Texas, 1840s, but we're best known after the Civil War. Then there's a section devoted to cowboy clothing, one whole wall size exhibit on the evolution of the cowboy boot from a military boot to what's become a fashion statement today. And likewise, the evolution of the cowboy hat from the sombrero, the sombrero Tejana, Texas hat, up to the different styles of what I call those big taco shells that people wear on the head today. and all through how that evolved from Wild West shows where the hats get giant and then they get smaller in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, and now they're back to those taco shells like you see today. And then in the people of the cowboy who made them up, we make it very clear that there were regional similarities but regional differences as well. So say a Texas cowboy didn't dress or conduct himself the way a Northern Plains cowboy up in Montana or Western Canada does. Far more Spanish down in Texas. And as you move north, things evolve. And then we have exhibit islands that are devoted to the multicultural story, not because it's politically correct to say that, but because it's true. There were black cowboys. There were American Indian cowboys. There were Hispanic cowboys. But most of them were white. So about 25% were cowboys of color. And we deal with that very specifically. Talk about each figure, each island as a life cast of a person from that particular demographic. So we actually have a life cast of a black cowboy, a life cast of an American Indian cowboy, and so on.
What's your favorite exhibit?
My favorite part is the American Cowboy Gallery, because that's the heart and soul. I mean, the stories we can tell in there, and especially there's an exhibit case that talks about those early drovers that came out of first Mexico and then Texas. My favorite artifact in the collection is this completely wore out Baquero saddle that's been what you call ranch repaired is what we call it. Ranch repaired who knows how many times because it's just completely worn through from all its use. And it's been, you know, there's rope burns on the horn. The horn's wooden. And it's one of my favorite things in the collection. And that in a sandal with a spur attached, because believe it or not, the very first cowboys were probably native people in Mexico. And they rode barefoot with a spur attached to their or strapped onto their bare foot, or they wore sandals. And those are so rare because ultimately what we're saying is that the first cowboys were probably enslaved people, more than likely. You know, they were Indians. So in other words, that whole narrative, the cowboys and Indians narrative, gets tipped on its ear when you realize the very first cowboys were Indians.
I'm sure I'm just like everybody else, imagining that cowboys, all they did was ride around strumming their guitars and singing. But the singing cowboy I know is largely embellished by Hollywood and was not exactly what we imagined. But cowboys did have songs, and they were performers. At least there was a side of the performing cowboy. Do you have that side of cowboyhood featured in your museum?
But we actually have a gallery devoted to Western performers. And in that gallery, I'm proud to say, we have examples of artifacts that are related to initially a Western fiction, to the silent movies, to the early talkies, up to more recent Westerns, and a whole section devoted to the John Wayne collection, because the John Wayne collection is here. He rode in the opening day parade on a white horse from downtown Oklahoma City up to where the hall is now, and left his collection to us when he passed in 1979. So we're proud to show Mr. Wayne's collection. And it goes on down the line, Gunsmoke and Roy Rogers and Dale Evans. And you mentioned music. Bob Wills, of course, is represented, but, you know, he passed the torch to the Playboys, to his little brother, Johnny Lee Wills. And we've got all of Johnny Lee Wills's rig in our collection as well. And Gene Autry, all spread out. Black actors, and you know, Herb Jeffries, for example, is represented in our collection. So we do a pretty good job in throwing that loop. And then right next to it is the American Rodeo Gallery, which is the finest collection of historic rodeo artifacts anywhere, period. Amen. No one can come close to what we can show in our American Rodeo Gallery. And rodeo cowboys were part of the founding of this place. We established the National Rodeo Hall of Fame in 1955 and have been electing historic rodeo contestants and associated people since that time.
Well, I guess it's been hard on everybody during this COVID-19 era. What can people expect if they were to come visit the National Cowboy and Western Heritage Museum during this time period?
We reopened May 18th. We were closed for 5 weeks. We do require a mask, and we do request social distancing. But I think, you know, there are certain things that all Americans should see, in my opinion. Yellowstone Park is one, and the National Cowboy Museum is another. This is something that I have learned, is that regardless of gender or culture, everybody at one time or another dreamed of being a cowboy. And I'll take that to my grave as gospel truth, at least in my own mind and my own soul. I'll tell you this, regardless of the demographic, whether those people are 7 years old or 70 years old, they all turn into children when I start to talk about cowboys. And you know, it's in our national fabric, our national soul. And so everyone starved for their authenticity, and there's nothing more authentic than an American cowboy.
All right, Michael Greyer from the National Cowboy and Western Heritage Museum. The National Cowboy and Western Heritage Center can be found online. Look them up. You won't regret it. Thanks for being on the show, Michael.
My honor and pleasure, sir.
All right, I guess we better get in the spirit here and get this second half started with the Hot Club of Cowtown. Well, a minor miracle happened a few weeks ago on a secluded Kansas farm, and it occurred while, ironically, a nation was transfixed by what was happening to the U.S. Capitol building. I want you to visualize this if you can. A small farmhouse sits on this tranquil prairie, roughly 1,190 miles away from Washington, D.C., where everybody was in an upheaval. Now, I'm told that the sunsets out there on that prairie are one that you need to see in person. And that particular night, the night that this story takes place, oh, it was one for the books. The sky was an arresting seascape of reds and violets and golds. You know, a lot of people are surprised to learn that Kansan sunsets are among the most unique in the world, but it's true. And do you know why? It's because of the dust. The dust particles in the air in Kansas, they come from all over the world. They travel from as far away as Africa, the Sahara Desert. Dust particles seriously travel all the way, and they hover over the central plains, and they've been doing this since the beginning of time. The cowboys would see sunsets while driving their beef through the Kansan Plains, and this dust that they would see hovering above them was being caught on global wind currents. Sometimes this dust, these huge clouds of dust, would travel 5,000 miles simply to come relax over the Flint Hills. Well, at dusk, the sun shines through these particles and it sets off an explosion of color. And it rings throughout the sky. It's just pink and yellows and broad strokes of purple like a living Monet painting. Well, it was during one such vivid sunset that an SUV came barreling up the elderly cowboy's driveway. And the wiry cattleman, tall and lean, stood outside his barn waiting, with his last cigarette dangling out of his mouth. And he was watching this car's dust cloud get bigger as it came up his drive. He pulled his jacket snug over his slender frame, and he looked at his outdoor thermometer. It was 29 degrees outside. But that's what happens out on these plains. From that SUV emerged his adult daughter and his two grandkids, ages 8 and 9. And they came running to him because, like all grandkids, they love to see their granddaddy. "Grandpa," they said, "are we too late?" And he just shook his head. He said, "No, no, no. You're just in time." Now, at this point, I want to pause here. Because most kids would have hugged their granddaddy. But this man is a cowboy. And he's a distant man. He's not a hugger. You can call it evidence of a really, really hard childhood on the plains. Or you can call it a byproduct of serving in the Vietnam War. Or you can just say he's a wind-burned cowpoke. And cowpokes are like that. His adult daughter says that he's a great guy. And in her own words, she says, "My father is a wonderful man. But he's never hugged me. Not in my whole life. We've never said I love you either, not even at my mother's funeral. He's just, well, my dad is a cowboy." Oh, the funeral. Well, that was back in March, and it has been hard on everyone. Real, real hard. Well, that night, the quiet man with the bow legs led his family into the barn to see something wonderful, something joyous. And the grandkids were every bit as excited as he hoped they would be when they found exactly what they were looking for. Because there in the corner of that ramshackled shed was a whelping hound who was about to give birth at any moment. Have you ever seen anything happier and more wonderful than a whelping hound? I don't know if you have ever seen a dog give birth, but it will bless your heart and blow your mind. The dog was curled tightly in the corner, and she was panting and whimpering, and her tongue was hanging out, and she looked exhausted, and the work hadn't even begun yet. This dog is the cowboy's dog, and her name is Mary. And she's an animal who happens to be, well, she's his best friend. Because you see, ever since the old man's wife died, Mary, the dog, has kind of become the official lady of the house. She looks after the old man. Dogs can do that, you know. She reminds him to eat and to bathe and to keep on living. And even though I realize what I'm about to tell you will seem unbelievable, especially to non-animal people, this is absolutely true. This dog, Mary, has changed the old cowboy. Well, Mary started acting weird a few months ago. She became lethargic. She was getting thicker in the torso. And the old cattleman's been around enough livestock long enough to know the emerging signs of motherhood. He's seen this a lot. And this was most definitely motherhood's big night. You should have seen it. It was beautiful. The newborn pups emerged from the birth canal with light applause from the grandkids. And this was accompanied with slack-jawed wonder that you will only see in a birthing situation. The old man squatted before Mary, and she was really, really panting now. And he was making sure everything was okay with her body, and he was speaking to her softly, and he was petting her often. And this is when the daughter noticed something unusual about her father. Something very, very different about his behavior. She overheard that old wrangler look at that canine and whisper to her, "I love you, honey." "What?" she was thinking to herself. "My father's never even said that to me." It was a low-level phenomenon. Nobody in the history of this man's family had ever heard him utter these words. Not to a dog, not to anybody. Oh, yes, there's something very, very different about this man. And his daughter could see it that night. While that hound lay whelping in the corner, she could see that he was fragile somehow. She could see that the exterior that he had worked so hard to toughen up over the years of wind-burned prairie droving was starting to thin somehow. One by one, the tiny canine lumps entered into this wonderful world, and it was a joyous thing to behold. Mary licked away their membrane sacs and bathed them. It was pretty gross to the grandkids, but it was also life-changing in a way. Because watching birth will change a person altogether. And these tiny little canine membrane sacs would be licked by their mother. And soon you would see this puppy, this little pug-looking face with these squinty eyes. Soon there were 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 puppies. And when the ordeal was over, the old dog fell asleep beside the rancher. The old man refused to leave her side, which I just think is wonderful. His daughter kept urging, like all good daughters do, "Dad, Dad, you got to come inside. It's too late. Come inside and go to bed." But he only shook his head, that wind-burned cowboy, and insisted that he would stay with Mary in the barn. And, you know, he did all night long. The next morning, his daughter found her hardened father fast asleep, seated on a cold floor, head resting against that raw wood, the barn wall. The dog's head was in his lap, and the tiny puppies squirmed and wriggled around their mama's belly. So innocently. Dogs are innocent. Dogs are guileless. They possess none of man's vices and all of his most fabulous qualities. When the old cowboy woke, he was smiling at his daughter. And she could see there was a definite change. It was all over his face. His cheeks were a little more taut. And his mouth was raised at the corners. And his forehead seemed a little more loose. She looked at him and said, "Dad, did you spend the whole night in this barn? I thought for sure you'd come inside last night." And he just nodded. And then without saying anything, he stood onto his lean legs. He stretched his joints, kind of like an old dog. And he simply approached his daughter with something important on his mind. Something very, very important. In fact, you could say, maybe one of the most important things in all of history, at least the history of the human race. And what took place in that little barn on that cold, cold 29-degree night was a quiet miracle. You know, miracles are quiet as supernatural things go. They occur without fanfare. There are no announcements. There are no trumpets. Nobody tells you it's going to happen. They just happen. They happen quietly. They happen out of the way. And the evidence of them is minimal. But they happen nonetheless. And what happened in that barn was that the old man outstretched his arms. And he hugged his daughter. Well, this surprised her. I mean, it really surprised her. She did not know how to react. In fact, she almost recoiled. And she didn't know what to do. She'd gone a lifetime without being touched by this man. But she didn't. Instead, she squeezed back. And the two of them didn't release, not for 5 or 6 minutes. Well, his daughter began to cry. And she felt her father quivering too beneath her arms. She heard him sniffle. And she heard his chest heave a little bit. And when they let go, the daughter said nothing at all. For what could she say? 43 years of an affectionless relationship, all undone with a single embrace. I mean, what was next? Racquetball on Jupiter? No, this was a miracle. Next, the cattleman held his daughter by her shoulders. And he said three words. Three one-syllable words, which every daughter, every cowgirl, deserves to hear from her father. These three small words, which nobody up on this earth can hear too often, worked their way into his daughter's ears and made a difference. And so, while our civilized world looks as though it will crumble, and while the tradition of human decency fractures like a jigsaw puzzle, while mankind's own darkness threatens to blind him, you ought to know, the sun still shines, and Kansas and cowboys still exist. Listening to Shaun of the South, and that's our show today, coming to you live via the podcast airwaves. This episode made possible by Case Knives, a true cowboy's knife. My granddaddy always said the best way to cure idle hands was to build something, so keep your hands sharp with a Case knife. And my granddaddy was actually a true cowboy who had been in a John Wayne movie with his brother, riding horses through all sorts of scenes. If you blink, you'll miss him, but he's in there, and I've seen him, I promise you that. Also want to say special thanks to Michael Grauer, the real cowboy and the curator of the National Cowboy and Western Heritage Museum in Oklahoma City. Visit nationalcowboymuseum.org. For more information, if you get time, you ought to swing by. You probably will find that it blesses your heart. I want to say thanks to the Hot Club of Cowtown for giving us true cowboy music. Also to Aaron Peters on the biscuit box fiddle, Sylvie Centimore on the drums, William Buchanan, Jake Howard, Dan DeLeon for making this show possible. If you're having a good week, send us an email, shaunofthesouthshow@gmail.com. If you're having a bad week, send us an email at shaunofthesouthshow@gmail.com. No matter what you're going through or what your week looks like, remember what Will Rogers said. He said, good judgment comes from experience, and that comes from a lot of bad judgment. Adios.